Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, April 11th, 2019. We'll start with a story that is titled District 118 to Demolish House for Center's Lot. And this is written by Carol Rome in Danville. Danville District 118 School Board members Wednesday night approved the demolition of a two-story vacant house behind the district's administration building. The board approved paying $15,000 to tear down the structure at 444 North Jackson Street plus excavation of the property. The removal of the structure will allow the district to extend its parking lot behind the Dr. David L. Fields Administrative Service Center at 110 East William Street. Also on Wednesday, board members learned that Mark Denman Elementary and Northridge Middle School have been selected as AVID, known as Advancement Via Individual Determination, showcase schools. Other districts will visit the two schools next year to see how they use the AVID program. They also learned District 118's Golden Ruler recipients are Ann Allegretti, instructional coach at Danville High School, Allison Baker, teaching assistant at Southview Upper Elementary School, Tina Jones, kitchen manager at Northridge Middle School, Barisha Keys, teaching assistant at Mead Park Elementary School, Julie Legg, third grade teacher at Liberty Elementary School, Michelle Lehman, third grade teacher at Southwest Elementary School, Mark Powell, custodian at Mark Denman Elementary School, Jamie Scovran, alternative teacher at Kenneth D. Bailey Academy, Honorable Judge Joseph Skowronski, volunteer at Northeast Elementary Magnet School, and Elizabeth Strader, kindergarten teacher at Edison Elementary School. They will be honored at the annual Golden Ruler Banquet, sponsored by the Vermilion County Regional Office of Education, at 6:30 p.m. on April 23rd at Bismarck Henning Junior High School. They also eliminated any unused emergency days from the school calendars. Since four emergency days were used due to wind chill, June 5th is the last day for traditional calendar schools, and June 12th for Northeast Elementary Magnet School, which is on a balanced calendar. They also approved a summer meal contract in which District 118 will provide meals at the Danville Family YMCA during the summer. The amount of the YMCA is charged for the meals covers all costs incurred by the district. Meals will be picked up daily at Northridge Middle School by YMCA staff members and delivered to their site. They also approved the seamless summer meal program at the district's summer school locations at the Housing Authority of the City of Danville and at Laura Lee Fellowship Hall. The district will offer free breakfast and lunch to anyone 18 or younger who goes to the school sites where summer school is taking place. Children do not have to be District 118 students. The locations and times are Mark Denman Elementary School, breakfast at between 8:30 and 9, and lunch from 11:30 to noon, June 10th through July 3rd, at Mead Park Elementary School, breakfast from 8:30 to 9, and lunch from 11:30 to noon, from June 10th through July 3rd, Southview Upper Elementary School, breakfast is 8:30 to 9, and lunch 11:30 to noon, from July 10th through the 19th, no meals served on July 4th or 5th, Laura Lee Fellowship, lunch only from 11:30 to noon from July 10th through July 3rd, and the Housing Authority of the City of Danville, lunch only from 11:30 to noon June 10th through July 3rd. And they also learned DHS's graduation ceremony is set for 3 p.m. on Sunday, June 2nd at David S. Palmer Arena, and Northridge Middle School's promotion is set for 6 p.m. on Tuesday, June 4th at the arena. Okay, the next story is titled Rail Improvements. Crossing gates could come this year on Griffin Street. And this is written by Jennifer Bailey in Danville. And there's a picture of vehicles approach the Griffin Street Railroad crossing. In this March 2018 photo, the crossing just south of Fairchild Street will see new gates and signals later this year. With approvals and agreements in place with the Illinois Commerce Commission and CSX Railroad, construction on the new railroad crossing gate system could occur this year on Griffin Street. Danville Community Development Director David Schnell reported on the railroad crossing improvements planned at the crossing near the Boys and Girls Club and Garfield Park at Tuesday night's Danville City Council Public Works Committee meeting. The crossing is where most recently a 13-year-old died in June of 2017 after being hit by a train while on his bicycle. The Danville City Council in December of 2017 authorized an agreement with the ICC for new railroad crossing gates. The crossing would see the installation of automatic flashing light signals and gates with bells controlled by a constant warning time security and equipped with an event recorder and a remote monitoring system by CSX, clearing of trees and brush by CSX, renewal of the railroad advance warning signs and pavement markings by the city, and minor approach grade adjustments in conjunction with 6-inch barrier curbing and or raised median treatments to prohibit access to the abandoned commercial entrance in the northeast crossing quadrant and to enhance the overall effectiveness of the new automatic gates by the city. According to an ICC Crossing Safety Improvement Program 5-year plan from last year, the estimated grade crossing protection fund cost to reconstruct approaches, install cantilever, modify automatic flashing light signals is $656,994 for the total estimated cost of $691,572. There also was another total estimate cost of $10,000 for other approach reconstruction. Schnell said he doesn't have final estimates on what the city's total cost would be. He proposed at Tuesday night's Public Works meeting to use $160,227 from 2016 Community Development Block Grant funds towards the city's portion of the crossing work. Schnell said pedestrian gates are part of the city's portion. City officials also have been working on a quiet zone through the Griffin Street Railroad Corridor area. Each year, the ICC compiles and approves a plan to make rail crossings across Illinois safer for motorists and pedestrians. The Crossing Safety Improvement Program prioritizes projects and allocates funds for much-needed rail crossing safety projects along local roads and streets across the state, said ICC Chairman Brian Sheehan through a recent press release. The ICC receives numerous requests from local communities and railroads for assistance from GCPF for safety improvements at public highway rail crossings. A number of factors are considered when prioritizing projects such as collision history, traffic volume, engineering requirements, and geographical location. The ICC also places a high priority on crossings in railroad corridors where conventional speed passenger trains operate, and locations where grade crossing blockages cause substantial motorist or emergency vehicle delays or a heightened risk for threat of train-vehicle collisions. In 2018, preliminary statistics indicate there were 82 collisions at public crossings in Illinois, compared to 88 in 2017, a decrease of 6.8%. Also, 31.7%, 26 of 82 of all collisions in 2018 involved cars driving into the sides of trains. Total fatalities resulting from collisions at highway rail crossings in Illinois decreased from 25 in 2017 to 19 in 2018. The ICC promotes and supports the 3 E's of railroad safety: education through operation, Lifesaver Illinois, enforcement of existing laws to ensure motorists and pedestrians obey all railroad safety laws, and the engineering necessary to make crossings physically and operationally safe as possible. Next story is titled Students to Learn About Careers, and this is written by Carol Roam in Danville. Students at Kenneth D. Bailey Academy on Friday will discover what it's like out in the working world. During the Academy's 7th annual Career Day, representatives from more than a dozen different companies and fields of interest in Danville and the surrounding areas will talk to students about what they do for a living and what job opportunities are available. Bailey Academy Principal Tracy Cherry originally came up with the idea to organize a Career Day, and students offer suggestions on the types of businesses they want to know more about. Valerie Kegers, a Bailey Academy high school teacher and the career day chairperson, organizes the event every year and starts contacting local professionals at least 2 months in advance to see if they would speak to the students about their career or business. On Friday, students who range from 6th grade to 12th grade will spend the entire day attending career session workshops in the top 6 fields in which they were interested in. They get to go to 6 different 40-minute sessions, Kegers said. At the beginning of the day, each student receives a folder with 100 different questions they could ask during the sessions. During each 40-minute session, business professionals will make presentations covering everything from what to expect in a particular field and the education needed for the job to various other topics related to their company or field of interest. A question and answer period will follow the workshop presentations. The kids are encouraged to dress for success that day, and the staff is asked to wear their college gear to promote college awareness, she said. The companies and individuals participating in this year's Career Day will include Jane McFadden, Vermilion County Coroner, Shannon Schroeder, District 118 School Board Member and Entrepreneur, Tammy Wilson from First Midwest Bank, Bill Klippinger from CarStar Sterling Collision, Susie Robinson, Recreational Therapy at Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System, Carolyn Kirk, District 118 employee, Nijah Givens, Lakeview College of Nursing, Penny Hunter, McLean Midwest, Kim Kuchenbrod, District 118 employee, Yolanda Duckworth, Project Success Coordinator, Beth DeMilano, District 118 School Resource Officer, a counselor, Anthony Nixon, Toyota Danville, Mary Wesley Brown from Carl Radiology, and Lieutenant Richard Irvin, Danville Fire Department. Several new presenters will be on hand this year, Kugaris said. We will have people who work in counseling, auto sales, and radiology, and we've never had anyone from the fire department before, she said. She said she was especially pleased to have someone who works in a radiology department of a hospital speak to the students. They always think nurse or doctor, she said, of the students, but I want to try to show them there are other lines of work in the medical field. Some presenters plan to include other aspects of life in their talk in addition to talking about their profession. Shannon Schroeder will talk about entrepreneurism. Kegar said she does an activity with the students and talks to them about common sense. District 118 employee Carolyn Kirk plans to talk to the students about conflict resolution. Kegar said she feels she learns as much as the students do during career day. It educates me too, she said. I learn more about the people who could employ our students in the future. Okay, now we'll run through the obituaries. Maurice Dell Smith, 75, of Rossville, passed away at 12:35 p.m. on January 29th at Carl Hoopston Regional Health Center. A memorial service will be at noon on Saturday, April 13th at First Presbyterian Church in Hoopston with Pastor Wade Miranda and Pastor Dan Hunt officiating. Visitation will be from 11 to noon Saturday at the church. Cremation rites have been accorded. Thomas W. Andrews, 67, of Danville, passed away at 4:55 p.m. on April 6th at OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center in Urbana, Illinois. A celebration of life will be at 10 a.m. Friday, April 12th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville, with Terry Walters officiating. Graveside committal service at 1 p.m. Friday at Eastlawn Memorial Park in Urbana. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Thursday, April 11th at the funeral home. Memorials in Thomas's memory may be given to the American Heart Association. Sharon V. Cook, 81, of Iliopolis, Illinois, passed away at April 7th, 2019 at St. John's Hospital in Springfield, Illinois. A celebration of Sharon's life will be at 2 p.m. Friday, April 12th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center at 3940 North Vermilion Street in Danville. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. prior to the service. Burial will be at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Memorials can be made in her name to any charity for the hearing impaired. Beulah Thomas, 96 of Danville, passed away at 11:30 p.m. Saturday, April 6th at Pleasant Meadows Senior Living in Chrisman. A celebration of Beulah's life will be at 1 p.m. Saturday, April 13th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center of Georgetown at 200 East West Street in Georgetown. Visitation will be from 11 to 1 p.m. Saturday prior to her service at the funeral home. She will be laid to rest in Little Grove Cemetery in Paris, Illinois. Memorial donations may be given in her name to donor's choice of charity. And Phyllis Ann Berlin, 79 of Danville, died Wednesday, April 10th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Memorial service will be at 1 p.m. Saturday at First Church of the Nazarene at 2212 North Vermilion Street in Danville. David Anderson will officiate. Workford Funeral Services at 3 South Hodge Street are in charge of the arrangements. Okay, the next story is titled Money Mentors Help People Reach Goals, and this is by a staff reporter in Danville. People looking for a volunteer opportunity to help people move forward in their lives should consider the University of Illinois Extension's Money Mentor Program. For many people, emergency expenses are a crisis. More than 40% of adults report they either could not cover an emergency expense of $400 or would cover it by selling something or borrowing money, according to the Federal Reserve Board's report on the economic well-being of U.S. households. The U of I Extensions program helps people build up their savings and learn other money management strategies. The Money Mentors program depends on trained volunteers to help community members develop spending plans, set financial goals, reduce debt, and build savings. The Money Mentor program combines research-based education with financial coaching. People come to Money Mentors seeking to improve their financial situation and looking for someone to provide positive feedback as they make big changes in their financial behaviors. Being prepared with a money mentor is like having a personal trainer for your finances, said Kathy Swedler, University of Illinois Extension educator. Money mentor volunteers work one-on-one with people who request help with personal money management. Mentor training consists of 30 hours of training, including using a flipped classroom style, using online-based training, and 6 3-hour in-person sessions. In-person training features games and role plays using financial content knowledge, plus developing coaching and communication skills. There is a $40 fee to cover training materials. Partial scholarships are available. Mentors and mentees come from all walks of life and ages. All mentoring help is free and confidential. The next training begins in May. If you would like to join the Money Mentor Volunteer Program that is working to provide financial education and mentoring to community members, visit the website at go.illinois.edu/moneymentors to register for the next training and to learn more about the program. Next story is titled Terre Haute Casino Bill Heads to the House. Written by Alex Modsit in the CNHI News in Indiana, and it's out of Indianapolis here. It was a good hearing. I think there was some good language added that continues to support Terre Haute and its efforts. And that was written by Senator John Ford, the Republican from Terre Haute. A bill that could put a casino in Terre Haute cleared the Indiana House Ways and Means Committee on Tuesday and now heads to the full House. The most notable change is the creation of a new independent gaming license for Vigo County. Senate Bill 552, as amended, moved forward by a vote of 17-6. Amendment 93 from Representative Todd Houston, the Republican of Fishers, brings sweeping changes to the legislation. Among other things, it creates a license for an inland casino in Vigo County. It requires a public question to be added to either the 2019 or 2020 primary ballot, and it requires, if the referendum passes, formation of a gambling advisory board in Vigo County. The board would consist of the Terre Haute mayor, a Vigo County commissioner, the president of Vigo County Capital Improvement Board, a Chamber of Commerce appointee, and a member appointed by the governor. It also lowers a relocation fee for a Gary, Indiana casino license from $100 million to $50 million. Houston said that no matter what's Spectacle Entertainment does with its Gary casinos as the legislation is currently written. Vigo County would have opportunity to vote for an inland casino via referendum. The question, shall inland casino gambling be permitted in Vigo County, would be on either the November 5th, 2019 municipal general or the May 5th, 2020 primary election ballots. If the referendum were to pass, legislation would require the formation of a Vigo County Casino Advisory Board. The board will be responsible for evaluating proposals to operate a casino in Vigo County. The board would then forward its recommendations to the Indiana Gaming Commission. The commission would select the top three proposals and open an auction process. The auction would be at an advertised meeting of the Game Commission and would see each of the finalists submit one bid. The highest of the three would be awarded the license. It requires a minimum bid of $25 million. Spectacle Entertainment would be free to compete for the Vigo County license. Overall, Senator John Ford from Terre Haute said the changes made to the SB 552 were in its best interest as it moved toward the House floor for second reading. It was a good hearing. I think there was some good language added that continues to support Terre Haute and its efforts, said Ford, who authored the bill with Senator Mark Messmer from Jasper. I think keeping the referendum was important for all of us in Vigo County, and the creation of an advisory board is a net positive, Ford said. Ford also supported the creation of a separate license for Vigo Casino, saying it opens the process in a way that gets more involved. There's going to be a very fair process, Ford said. It lets the community get involved and lets the free market decide who operates the casinos. With the creation of the new license and spectacle being able to use the 2,764 the gaming positions associated with its license, regardless of if they have surrendered one license to the state, has some questioning Houston as to whether this now represents a clear expansion of casino gaming in Indiana. Houston said everyone is entitled to his or her opinion. Well, as I've said before, that term expansion is used in a lot of different ways, Houston said, but we are going to allow the operation of a casino in Terre Haute. It's really in the eye of the beholder, and I respect both opinions on that. Spectacle Gaming LLC this year acquired the two Majestic Star casino licenses, which now operate on a Gary, Indiana harbor of Lake Michigan. Its leading partners are Terre Haute businessman Greg Gibson and Rod Ratcliffe, former CEO and chairman of Centaur Gaming. Kind of a slow news day, so I'll read an editorial about libraries here. It says, plan a visit to your library. Before this week gets away from us, we'd be remiss not to note that it is National Library Week. The special week gives everyone an opportunity not only to appreciate everything libraries have to offer, but to offer appreciation for those who work in them. Area residents can take advantage of excellent libraries in their community. Libraries hold open the door to ideas, all ideas for everyone. The material found within libraries and in their digital archives touched so many areas of our lives. We all know about the books, fiction and nonfiction, that fill shelf after shelf with tales of imagination and information. Visiting a library also can include music and art and news, real journalism from around the world that provides a perspective of society different than our own. They often provide use of computers and the internet to those who might not have any other access. Today's libraries also offer an array of special programs for patrons of all ages, from preschool programs that introduce children to the value of books, to the educational sessions that teach computer skills to book clubs, to movies, to coffee hours. For those who live within a library district, all of this wonder can be explored with a simple library card. Those who don't live within the district must pay a fee to get a card, but the cost remains one of today's best bargains. Public lending libraries began in the American colonies. Benjamin Franklin was among those who organized one of the first libraries in Philadelphia. The unfettered access to political ideas, philosophy, and other information has helped shape a generation after generation of Americans and continues to do so today. Those who have not visited their local library in a while should make the effort to do so. It's sure to become a favorite spot. Okay, and in Midwest Voices, measles and the increasing danger to Illinois kids. The evidence keeps piling up that Illinois must toughen its laws on vaccine exemptions. In dozens of schools in the Chicago area and in hundreds across the state, vaccination rates are below what experts recommend to prevent the spread of measles, according to a new analysis by the WBEZ. According to experts, at least 98% of students in a school should be vaccinated for their own protection and to provide protection for the children who, for legitimate medical reasons, can't be vaccinated for the highly contagious disease. But WBEZ found that at 67 Chicago area schools and 514 schools across Illinois, vaccination rates topped out at 95% or lower. At four Chicago schools, fewer than 50% of children had proof of vaccination. None of this should be surprising. As we wrote last month, the number of religious exemptions from childhood vaccines has spiked alarmingly in Illinois, despite a 2015 law that was supposed to make it tougher to get such an exemption. Meanwhile, in late March, the Cook County Department of Public Health released a scary timeline showing how an infected person exposed thousands of others to the measles over 7 days. It's playing with fire to let students attend school without the required vaccines. Besides being highly contagious, measles can have serious complications. Scientists have repeatedly proven that the MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine is safe, despite conspiracy theories and myths to the contrary. Yet those baseless myths are fueling an alarming rise in measles cases nationwide. When we first wrote about the dangers of anti-vaccine myths, 206 measles cases had been reported in the U.S., 5 were reported in Illinois. Since then, the national number has more than doubled to 465, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Two more cases have been reported in Illinois. Time to heed the advice of the American Academy of Pediatrics. Eliminate all non-medical childhood vaccine exemptions. Do it for your kids' health. Run through some community briefs real quick. In Danville, classmates together, the 1949 Danville High alumni will meet at 11:30 on Saturday for lunch at Jocko's Pizza Inn. Neighbors to meet, members of the Holiday Hills Neighborhood Association will meet at 6 p.m. today at Family Church on Bowman Avenue. Doug Toole, director of the Vermilion County Health Department, will speak. Also, Aaron Troglia, recently elected as alderman to represent the area, will attend. And in Catlin, Auto Club to meet. Ileana Antique Automobile Club will meet at 6:30 p.m. today in Catlin Town Hall. Participants will make plans for upcoming car shows. And in Hoopston, support group meets. Members of the Hoopston Breast Cancer Support Group will meet at 6 p.m. on April 18th in the pit stop at Fat Lane's Bowling Alley. The group meets the third Thursday of each month. For information, call Pat Foster at 309-208-9829. And in Westville, the library plans event. Touch a Truck will come to the library at 9 to noon on April 13th. Children will have a chance to see a variety of vehicles up close. Children also will be able to create a truck color scratch craft. Those attending who reside in the library district are invited to apply for their library card. Just bring a photo ID and two pieces of mail or other forms of identification that are current and list your name and address. So, and in Cayuga, Indiana, there's supper to be served. American Legion Junior Girls will serve an all-you-can-eat spaghetti dinner from 4 to 7 p.m. EDT time Saturday at the Legion. The cost is $8 for adults and $4 for children 12 and under. So that'll be it for today, Thursday, April 11th, 2019. It's supposed to be up in the 70s today, and then it's going to get rainy. So anyway, I hope you enjoy your day and your week, and hopefully I'll see you again next week. Have a good week. Take care. Bye.